Hello, Kept Faith listeners. 2021 is finally here. The most anticipated Padres season in over a decade is almost upon us, and we want to be there with you every step of the way. Go to patreon.com/thekeptfaith. That is patreon.com/thekeptfaith. And join us today. $1, $5, $10, or $50 million. Those are the only available options. Every little bit goes a long way. Join us today. Join our army, and we will take down all the other podcasts one at a time. Patreon.com/thekeptfaith. We would love to have you a part of our team. And who knows, you might get a free gift here and there or something else. Or I don't know, maybe you'll just get a high five next time we see you, but probably shouldn't touch each other right now, at least for another year. It's nothing personal. It's the pandemic.
Here's the ledger keeper of the Padres canon, Dallas McLaughlin.
Welcome back to the Padres canon. Thank you, voice. Thank you for introducing me as you do every single week. I apologize. We took a week off last week and it wasn't anything to do with anything other than the fact that I have a new baby. My new baby came, my child. My daughter, she is now in this world, and appreciate all the texts and the phone calls and the DMs and all the stuff that came in congratulating me, the Padres community, for as terrible and as divisive and horrible to each other we are. Every once in a while, we're actually nice to each other. So I do appreciate all the people from Padres Twitter and Padres podcast, Golden Ages. I don't know what the hell it is. Thank you so much for your kind words. Honestly, it meant a lot. But, you know, not enough for me to keep talking about it. Oh my God, Shooter. The first person who was brought up into the Padres canon that did not get inducted. And it was a healthy margin. He lost by over 30%. Rod Beck, I apologize, but it's time to sit down. Everybody sit down or lay face down on the ground, because Rod Beck, you did not make it into the Padres canon. But we are back with a beautiful guest. I mean, literally, what a beautiful man. It's almost uncomfortable. From the 5.5 podcast, Mr. Danny Ortiz joins us, and he brings us a candidate for the canon that, well, listen, you'll see how I ended up voting at the end. And of course, you'll see how Danny ended up voting as well. Enjoy this podcast episode while I go tend to my family. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Padres canon, thank you for listening so far. It's been a doozy of a season, and I'll tell you right now, we have, I don't know how I'm going to vote on this player. I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I'm in the middle, but we have a fantastic guest from the 5.5 podcast, one of the top four podcasts in the history of Padres podcasts. Really the better half of that podcast, Mr. Danny Ortiz. Ortiz?
That's right.
Or do you say it funny? Do you say it in some weird way that made me?
Okay. No, you got it right. You didn't say Ortiz or Orts. So yeah, it's Danny Ortiz. That's what
I'm always worried. I'm going to say
it. How many Padre podcasts have there been? I feel like there's only been like five or six.
No, there's 87. Did you not know that? There's 87.
No, I didn't. The top four doesn't sound so bad.
No, man, I was legitimately surprised at how many Padres podcasts there were, and then apparently they even forgot a couple. So that was amazing. Listen, I thought we would lose to you guys, but we made a late surge.
So did I. No offense.
No, none taken. None taken.
I'll have to take it up with the may or may not exist Padres Rasa threat to see how we did not get the votes needed. I don't understand how we. You know, I want an audit. Yeah. They needed to stop the count when we were ahead,
It's all fake news.
Frankly, we were winning that poll, and frankly, we did win that poll. So
yeah,
you know, I take the necessary steps.
Listen, if we were going to lose to anybody, I wish it would have been you and not Hot Tub Padres. But that's how it goes.
And no offense to anybody, I don't listen to it. I've listened to the Kept Faith, namely because I've been on it.
Yeah.
And I've listened to Quintelligence a couple times, but the Bluntly Boys, I've also been on that one.
Well,
so no offense to many people, but I've never half the podcast.
I mean, you know, let's be honest. Bluntly,
at least
really.
The Hot Lava Talent didn't win.
They didn't pull their SDUT votes. Yeah, I appreciate that. Bluntly should have won. When we really shake it down, Bluntly should have taken us all out.
I do love the Bluntly boys.
But listen, you have brought somebody for the Padres canon today that is, that I, like I said just a second ago, I have no idea how I'm going to vote on this. You have brought Mike Cameron. Let me give a brief background on Mike Cameron, and then we will get into your reasoning, your argument. He was born in 1973 in LaGrange, Georgia, and he quickly made his way through the ranks. He was in the major. He was in Major League Baseball for a very long time, I think much longer than people think. He was drafted in 1991 by the Chicago White Sox in the 18th round of the 91 amateur draft. He was then traded by the White Sox in 98, so played quite a long time with the White Sox, to the Cincinnati Reds for Paul Konerko. Which I had, and I'm a humongous Reds fan, and I, for some reason, had no idea Konerko was in the Reds organization. But he was traded to the Reds for Konerko. And then in 2000, just 2 years later, traded by the Reds with Jake Meyer, Antonio Perez, Brett Tomko to the Seattle Mariners for one Ken Griffey Jr. And we will get into that trade when we start talking. In 2003, granted free agency from the Seattle Mariners, then signed with the Mets, then was traded by the Mets in 2005 to your San Diego Padres.
Right.
For Xavier Nady. Oh, man, the names that we remember. That is how he wound up on the San Diego Padres. And, Danny, you're here to say that he should be included in the canon. Why?
Yes.
Why, sir?
There's a couple of reasons why. I mean, first and foremost, the first thing that popped out when you asked me who would you want included, and when Mike Cameron's name popped up, the biggest reason why is that, you know, we all herald the 98 team, right? The 98 team is – you know, Sweeney can't stop talking about it.
No.
That's like, it's all he has in life. His wife left him. His kids don't talk to him, but he's got the 98 team, right?
So, yeah.
And Steve Finley's a big part of that. Everybody talks up Steve Finley, but when I actually go in there and I look at the numbers and I think, well, okay, it's Finley. He held it down for 4 years. We really had a rotating door of center fielders up until we got to Mike Cameron. Because when you look at after Finley left, we had Ruben Rivera. He didn't pan out. We had, what was the guy, Eric Owens. He didn't pan out. I don't remember half the center fielders who ran out there. The last guy we had before we got Mike Cameron was Dave Roberts, who wasn't really a center fielder. He was just fast.
Yeah.
And he had been a bench player his entire career before he got him. So Mike Cameron was really the first established, this guy's a legitimate everyday center fielder. He had a great defensive reputation. He had a reputation as being a good power hitter, not the, you know, the heart and soul or the anchor of the lineup, but a guy you can bat fifth or six. I think we batted him lead off 2-3. He was all over the place for us.
Yeah.
But a guy that you could rely on 150, 160 times a year to play great defense. He won a gold glove here, but people forget that as well. And really, ever since him, he was the last center fielder we had until we got Trent Grisham. So it was a revolving door of, you know, hey, did you bring a glove to the ballpark and can you play the outfield? And they ran him out until they got him. And then once we lost him, because he walked with Milwaukee, after a PED suspension, he went to Milwaukee. We never replaced him until we got to Trent Grisham. Mike Cameron's last year here was 2007, I believe.
Yep.
It was 2020 by the time we got Trent Grisham. So to me, he's probably the best center fielder we've had in the Petco era by far. He's one of the better center fielders we've had in the modern era, personally. And when we go over it a little bit later, I'll go over the numbers to back it up. But, you know, at bat for at bat, inning for inning, as a rate player, if you look at the rate stats, he was actually a better Padre in his 2 years than Steve Finley was in his 4 years on average. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that. And we'll go into it. I'm not hating on Steve.
No. I mean,
yeah, we're going to go into that.
You can talk all the shit you want about Steve Finley. I have no. I mean, listen.
Noted restaurateur Steve Finley.
Noted. Oh, shit. I even forgot what they're called. I wanted to call it business in the front, party in the back, but that's not what they're called.
Mullets.
There
you go.
Yeah.
We're at the bus cut crew. I don't really worry about the mullet.
Yeah, no, you and I are on the same page. But Finley had a nice little ape drape going on there for a while. I'm sympathetic to Mike Cameron. For the only reason I'm sympathetic for Mike Cameron is that he had, I talked about the trade to Seattle. And he was essentially tasked with replacing Ken Griffey Jr. in Seattle. A lot of people don't remember that, but they remember him going to Seattle And there was this feeling. He was young. This was 2000. He was still young. Like you said, great defensive player. Had pop come at, and Cincinnati hit 21 home runs in 99 for Cincinnati. He was a good player, and there was still some growing to do. And I just remember that it was like that thing where it was the same thing for Griffey in Cincinnati too. It was like they'd swapped and neither one of them could pull it off. I mean, Griffey. He's always going to be good, but he couldn't be the cornerstone of the Reds franchise. He couldn't be that player that turned it around for the Reds. He just kept getting injured. And then you had Mike Cameron, who was never going to be the centerpiece for the Seattle Mariners, but was expected to do so. Because he essentially replaced Griffey. And it was just, I felt bad for him, you know, to have so much of that on his shoulders. So he's always been in my mind. And then he went to the Mets. You know, it's not like he didn't pan out for the Mariners. He had great years in Seattle. Fantastic. And he was good. He just wasn't that guy who was going to bring it all home for them. Went to the Mets and immediately had one of his best years in the majors by far as power goes. And then was sent to the Padres. I will say I take some umbrage with your remark that we haven't had a center fielder since him. I mean, I think you're forgetting Will Myers.
One year. He's got to play, got a position. And I love Will Myers.
I'm kidding.
You mentioned he never, you know, he's replacing Griffey, right? I want to throw some. Now, granted, Ken Griffey Jr. was marred by injury, but health is a skill, right? You know, you take care of yourself. You got to give guys credit. Mm-hmm. For what they did do or what they didn't do. So this is for all the calculator crew out there. From the year 2000, the first year after he was flipped, all the way through 2010, Ken Griffey Jr. on average was about a two-win player. A league average player is about a two-win player, right? That's mm-hmm. from 2000 to 2010. Now, Mike Cameron lasted to 2011, but we're not going to count that because he was DFA'd, I believe, and played for a couple teams. So mm-hmm. from 2000 to 2010 – Mike Cameron, on average, was about a three-win player. So he was better. He was a better value, especially if you're taking money. But just from, you know, a baseball standpoint, Mike Cameron, in the back end of his career, Ken Griffey's one of the greatest of all times. Injuries marred his career and ruined what could have been.
Yep.
But from 2000 to 2010, that 11-year stretch, Mike Cameron was actually the better player. So whoever had Mike Cameron was getting more than what the Reds were getting for giving him up to get Ken Griffey Jr. pay him exorbitant amounts of money.
Yeah, so much money.
Believe it or not.
As a Reds fan, I remember that time with just such high hopes, and then they were dashed so quickly. And then the Reds, it took the Reds like years to recover from paying him so much money and not getting anything for it. Thank God for Joey Votto. You know, it's crazy that you brought up Mike Cameron. It's not crazy that you brought up Mike Cameron. It's just interesting to me because he only played here for 2 years, 2006, 2007. If you want to jump into those stats, we totally can do it. But I do agree with you that around 2006, you know, the Padres were just – before that, it was just this weird hodgepodge of let's throw these people in and see what – I mean, with Mike Piazza, for God's sakes, for a while.
Hey, he was good here. Yes, he was good.
He was fine, but you know what I mean? But like there was, what was that one year that we, I forget the year off the top of my head, but we had him and we had Tom Lampkin, and we started Lampkin in the playoffs over Mike Piazza.
It was Josh Bart.
It was
so that year Bochy was managing, it was 06. So we had David Wells start against the Cardinals in a day game.
Yes.
Josh Bart for some reason was catching. And then we also had Josh Barfield's son.
Yep.
Who had one good month, but you know, a high upside rookie at the time. And we had picked up Todd Walker at the trade deadline to play third base. He was terrible at it. Through no fault of his own. And then he would later file a grievance against Sandy Alderson for cutting him because he took arbitration instead of giving us a draft pick. But that's neither here nor there.
You know way too much about Todd Walker's career, but I appreciate it.
Just the Padres in general. Yes. The 06 playoff game. It was Bart catching with Piazza on the bench for some reason. Piazza had a really good year, hit 20-plus home runs. Mm-hmm. And then Jesse Barfield, who was supposed to be – or Josh, Jesse, whatever.
Yeah.
Young Barfield, who was our Rookie of the Year candidate and had a pretty good overall season. He hit for one great month. But still, he got benched for Todd Walker. And I think that was the beginning of the end for Bruce Bochy.
Yeah. I just remember I went to that game. A buddy of mine is a huge Cardinals fan. And we went to the game that Josh Bart started. And I literally kept turning to him saying, what the hell? Why is Piazza not starting? And, you know, Bochy was big on those matchups. He, you know, lefty righty matchups. It was always in the back of his head. I remember him. I remember there being some kind of argument for why Josh Bard was starting that game. And I'm like, well, it's not a good argument, whatever it is. We have a Hall of Fame catcher who's not starting right now. But regardless.
My guess is it was he was a catcher and he wasn't good defensively. They just wanted to go with somebody better.
Yeah, whatever.
Defensively, which is stupid.
Did not pan out in that series, that's for sure.
No, it did not.
But like, you know, those years were so funny because we had Maddox, we had Wells, we had Piazza, and it felt like these older guys who were, who were already famous, who had already had careers, coming to San Diego as kind of a swan song for their careers, getting to golf and hang out at the beach or whatever they wanted to do. And then we bring in Mike Cameron, who to me is like, okay, wait, now this is an actual, like, we can build a team around Mike Cameron for a couple of years. Well, yeah. You didn't really see that happening with the Greg Maddux or Piazza. This was obviously the twilight of their years. But Cameron, you know, he's kind of in the – he's 33 years old, but still, I mean, he's good. And it's like, all right, well, maybe he can anchor us for a couple of years.
It was kind of like bringing in Tommy Pham last year.
Yeah, totally.
Pham is a better offensive player than Cameron. But it was a similar idea where you're trading a guy who you just didn't have – a spot for, because at the time in the outfield, they still had Dave Roberts. Klesko was still under contract. Mm-hmm. They had Adrian Gonzalez at first. They had Giles in the outfield. So they needed a center fielder, and they needed a third baseman going into that offseason. They traded for Kuzminoff, but they still needed a center fielder. So the only other option, Kuz was the following year. I think we had Vinny Castillo for a little while in 06. Oh, but anyways, we needed an established center fielder. And again, after Finley, we had all those guys. I remember in 04, they went and got Jay Payton, who was coming off a good year in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't very good. He's about average. And then after that was 04. And then 05, we picked up Dave Roberts after his heroics in Boston. But he had never been an everyday player. And he did pretty good for us, Dave Roberts. His better years here, the 2 years he was here, and somehow convinced the Giants to give him a long-term deal that panned out really well for them. But Mike Cameron was like the first move where I thought, like, wow, like, he's actually good now. You know, he's not in the twilight of his career. Like, he's in his prime. He's a great defensive player, and he's going to solidify that outfield, because now on defense, we had Giles and Wright. I don't recall how great he was, but I don't remember him other than not being able to throw well, being terrible. Yeah. But then we have Dave Roberts, who's basically a poor man's Brett Gardner at left, and now we have this guy who's considered like an all-star and eventually became a gold glove center fielder at Petco after all these, like, revolving, random guys just getting plugged in there.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I was very excited about Mike Cameron. And that first year, I mean, if you want to get into stats, that first year, he had a fantastic year. He was even involved in MVP voting, and he got his gold glove.
He won a gold glove. He's MVP. That year, he put up about 4.5 win player. He's very good. His first year, hit 355 on base, 42 slug. I'm pretty sure he had 20 home runs. He did.
Yeah, 22 home runs. 22,
yep, and then he had 21 the next year. Yeah, he was an absolute great pickup. And as much as we liked Xavier Nady, there just wasn't a spot for, unless you wanted to keep Dave Robertson center, which I don't know how much they wanted to, but like you said, it's a good move. You're getting an established veteran for 2 years. He didn't fit in New York anyways. I don't know if you remember, but I think the year before, he had collided with Carlos Beltran. Mm-hmm. They basically got in a car wreck in the outfield with two center fielders going for one ball, so it clearly wasn't a fit. Next, Nady never went on to do too much. He had an okay career. So it's really one of the better trades. And like I said, he doesn't get talked about a whole heck of a lot, especially compared to somebody like Finley, who seems to be like the center fielder of the franchise. When people think center fielders, but I would legitimately take Mike Cameron's 2 years over Finley's 4 years any day of the week. He's a legitimately better player by pretty decent margin.
I mean, there's a lot of people who are yelling at their however they listen to this right now with that comment. I mean, I could tell you Mark Sweeney is. You didn't know Finley. He's a great baseball guy. So you basically, your argument for inclusion here is that he solidified the center field position for the first time in a decade, basically.
Yeah, pretty much in just about a decade. Yeah. That was a team that was trying to win. That 07 team looked pretty good until injuries caught up to them at the end of the year. But yeah, you know, that was really the first run 04 through 07 where they legitimately had a shot at the playoffs since 98. And he was a big part of that, at least 2 years of it.
And listen, I know you love advanced stats. I am not nearly as well versed as you are in them, but I do bring up WAR on this podcast, and his career WAR is great. 46.7.
Which is very underrated for his overall career. I do think when you mentioned at the top that most people didn't realize how long he actually played. I mean, we got him in his mid 30s and he was still really productive enough that a team like the Brewers, after he walked, decided to take a waiver on him. I'd have to look it up to see how he did for the Brewers, but I'm pretty sure he was great.
Yeah.
He really didn't fall off until he was 37 years old and he broke in at 22. So to have that kind of a run, you know, where you're basically good until you're 36, is pretty good. Like I said, he had a better 2000 to 2010 than Ken Griffey. Part of that is injuries, but even if you just average it out over 650 plate appearances, he still ends up being better, namely because of defense, but still. And like I said, he's incredibly undervalued. I mean, he played in an era with Ken Griffey, but also two guys who I think are borderline Hall of Famers, Jim Edmonds and Andrew Jones, also played in that era. Edmonds, of course, with the Cardinals, got a lot of pub because he was constantly in big matchups and big primetime games. But Mike Cameron kind of gets buried under all that. And he gets buried in Padres lore because he's not Steve Finley. And he gets buried in general because he played in an era with probably the greatest defensive center fielder since Willie Mays, Andrew Jones, and then Jim Edmonds, who to me is also underrated as much love as he's gotten.
Oh, I feel like with Jim Edmonds, there's a couple things. You're also talking former Padre Jim Edmonds. Let history never forget.
There's the prime example of why Mike Cameron is underrated, because his replacement was Jim Edmonds. That's who replaced him for all of a couple months, followed by Jody Garrett, Tony Gwynn Jr., and my mind just starts drawing a blank on our center fielders until we got to Trent Grisham, Will Myers 1 year, and some other guys. Oh, Margot. Yeah, but you can see as soon as Mike Cameron left, it was just, you know, another Ferris wheel of center fielders. You know?
Yeah, rotating door.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim, the other thing about Jim Edmonds too, and I think Andrew Jones to some respect, is that there's like the PEDs, like I think – holding over their heads a bit, that there's possibilities that they took PEDs. I mean, Jim Edmonds played for those Angels teams in an era where everybody on those Angels teams, I think, was juicing. So I think there's like, you know, some question marks about that.
And Mike Cameron actually got suspended. I don't remember. Sandy Alderson was running. He wasn't the GM, but he's the de facto GM in front of above Towers. And he is notable for not getting into bidding wars. That's how Trevor Hoffman walked to Milwaukee, and that he gave him a 3-year offer, I want to say going into 08 or 09, one of those years, and Trevor didn't take the deal. He wanted to see what else he could get, and Alderson reneged on the deal and said, you know what, we're going to pull it off the table. And I think the same thing worked for Mike Cameron, especially because he had he got popped for PEDs and some kind of protein powder or something he was taking. So he actually missed 42 games that year. He had played, other than that year he got hurt in New York, at that point he had averaged about 140, 150 games a year until he got popped. And even then, it's hard to say who did and who didn't do it. I'm not the type that thinks it really matters. You're not going to give me PEDs and suddenly I turn into a respectable amateur player. But, you know, Mike Cameron still had that issue. But, I mean, he's in his late 30s and he still went out after getting popped and still put up great production for two more years before finally hitting a wall.
Yeah, I mean, he hitting a wall at 37 is, you know, admirable. I hit my wall at 27. So, I mean, he's been doing great. Let's talk a little bit. We kind of brought it up already. I'll kind of give a little button on this. He, as we've said, signed with the Brewers in 2008. And then in 2009, signed with the Red Sox. This is where he starts. The wheels kind of come off in 2009. And then in 2011, goes to the Marlins. 2011, released by the Marlins. And let's see here. In July 5th, he gets – so he was only with the Marlins for 3 months at best. Gets released by them.
He did hit a late game, a late – so I believe, I want to say it was – It may have been, I don't think it was Gerry Coleman Day at the ballpark. It was some big deal at the ballpark that day. And he was on the Marlins, and he actually had, I think, a game-tying go-ahead home run that eventually Will Venable saved us with a walk-off. But I'm pretty sure at some point, as a member of the Marlins, Mike Cameron came back to haunt us and hit a big home run late.
Well, I remember him going to the Marlins and me thinking to myself, like, that makes sense. And I don't know why, but for some reason, Mike Cameron on the Marlins just made sense. 2011, he was signed as a free agent with the Nationals. And then just 2 months later, voluntarily retired from the Nationals. So not much of a big career after he leaves the Brewers, but he still hung out and was still productive. I think an interesting side note, because some, you know, a lot of these guys, once they leave, once they retire, a lot of them come back as coaches for various organizations. Mike Cameron to me always seemed like a guy who could come back as a coach. So far hasn't, but he's done a lot of stuff as far as philanthropy, him and his wife. And I think a lot of people don't know that his son, Daz, Dazman Cameron, was the 37th overall pick by the Houston Astros in the 2015 draft and is currently an outfielder in the Tigers organization.
Yeah, involved in the he was one of the prospects I got back for Justin Verlander.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like a lot of these guys, they're either they either become coaches or their children go off and become major leaguers. It's kind of one of those guys who never really leaves the game. All right. Well, listen, we have said all of the things unless there's anything more you'd like to add to his case.
No. Okay. I think I did it. I'm glad I didn't have to. I'm glad you didn't have too much pushback because I had some Steve Finley slander ready to go. but thankfully you didn't push too back, so I don't have to go attack Finley.
No, listen, I here's the thing about me is, I for the 94 strike really took me out of the game. And so I didn't come back to the game until the Padres were in the 98 World Series. That I was like, okay, I'll start watching and seeing what's going on. And that's what got me back into baseball. So I don't have a lot of love for Finley other than he was on that team. And that was great. Fantastic. But other than that, you're not going to find a Finley stand here. If anybody from that team that I loved a lot was Greg Vaughn. And that's only because he went on to my beloved Cincinnati Reds and hit 50 home runs and was definitely juicing the entire time.
but he's an all-around great guy and loves Tony Gwynn. So what can we say?
Listen, like you, I will never condemn anybody for doing steroids past a certain point. Anyways, all right. So listen, we bring it to you now, Padres Twitter. Obviously, Danny wants Mike Cameron in the canon. I'm personally here, Danny. I'm sorry. I'm going to say no. And only because listen, I think I'll lose this one, but only because he was only with us for 2 years. He was great with us for 2 years. You can't deny that. But I feel like he is a member of the Mariners in their canon, and that's where it stands. But listen, I will probably be vetoed on this for sure. But because we come to you, Padres Twitter, you are the decider. Should Mike Cameron be inducted into the Padres canon when you open that giant book of Padres?
You have to introduce him in a way that boots my propaganda. Should the greatest center fielder in Petco Park history to this point be included in Padres canon?
You're right. That's a better way to do it. It's up to you. Go to @thekeptfaith on Twitter, the Kept Faith on Twitter. It's in the pinned tweet right there. Should he be included? Just a simple yes or no. Your vote matters. You've heard our arguments. I've barely argued. I had a little one and then got shot down by advanced stats once again. The best center fielder in Petco Park history outside of Dave Roberts, Mike Cameron.
Dodger loving
going on. It's nonstop.
You shall be canceled immediately.
Please listen to Danny's much superior podcast, 5.5. You all know what it is. You guys have your own Twitter account, right? Is it @55?
Yes, the @55 podcast.
@55 podcast on Twitter. And then your Twitter handle, sir.
It is @5.5 dance. That's the number 5, P-O-I-N-T, 5 Dan. On Twitter @5.5 Dan.
And listen, if you listen to the Kept Faith, you're just hearing a lot of jokes and interviews. But if you want actual Padres in-depth coverage, listen to the 5.5 podcast. It's on all the podcast platforms. And I think we both can agree, don't listen to Hot Tub Padres or whatever the hell it is. thank you for joining me, Danny. I appreciate it. And I'm interested to see how this pans out.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that you having me.
Go!